Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, March 31st, 2016. ONMI says it will help in transporting the former rebels of SPLA-IO to Juba.
40 have been transported by ENMIS and the other 90 have been transported with the support of the JMEC and CDSAM.
And civil servants in WAO received their salaries and are saying the money is not enough.
Every day you go to the market, you find prices increase. We have even avoided maize flour because it has become so expensive. It cannot do anything.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The commissioner of Yambio County is asking farmers to return home and cultivate their farms after 100 local vigilantes known as the Arrow Boys accepted an unconditional offer of amnesty from President Salva Kiir. As Gift Friday reports from Juba, some Yambio residents say the amnesty offer will help restore peace to the area.
Late last month, Yambio County authorities asked local vigilantes who agreed to lay down their weapons to fill an amnesty form. The form asks for personal details as well as information on when the vigilantes rebelled. A vigilante must answer whether they were forcefully recruited or voluntarily joined the rebellion and explain their reasons for joining and giving up their rebellion. Yambio County Commissioner Hussein Enoka says the Arrow Boys are responding positively.
Over 170 people. They are still coming daily, filling the forms, yes. The form is for those who have all the rebel activities decided to come home to live normal, his or her normal life as before.
32-year-old Taban Alfred, a former vigilante, says he returned to Yambio at the end of last month after hearing about President Kiir's amnesty offer as well as the state governor's call for them to come home. Speaking in Arabic, Alfred says he rebelled against the government because he felt authorities did not recognize the important role the Arrow Boys played in ending an insurgency by the Ugandan Lord's Resistance Army in the former Western Equatorial State.
Former Speaker General of the South Sudan, Oja Goloyaki, the government of the South Sudan, Wadilana Gurush,
the former Speaker of the National Assembly came to Yambio and said the government of South Sudan had given 5 million South Sudanese pounds to the Arrow Boys. I was the coordinator of the Arrow Boys in Western Equatoria State as a whole, and the other youth got angry and thought I had embezzled the money. They asked, "Why is the money taking too long?" When we finished the job of fighting the LRA, nobody appreciated us.
Alfred says some youth rebelled because they were outraged over the killings of young people and the elderly, which they believed were carried out by government forces in the area. He says others who rebelled against the government felt they were being marginalized in the society. Yambio resident Emmanuel Sumaki says President Kiir's amnesty will restore peace in Budwe State.
"This is our brothers. We are really highly welcoming them back home. No, they were just fighting for their rights, and the government have accepted their rights, so we don't have any problem as a citizen."
County Commissioner Enoka says the Budwe State capital of Yambio is relatively peaceful now, and he is encouraging residents to return to farming.
"Let everybody go for their cultivation, because one day we will never call upon an angel to bring food to Yambio. We used to feed ourselves by our hands. Only the one who wants to provide tools can be provided, but we cannot beg food to be brought here."
Enoka says the rebels and government officials are expected to sign a peace deal mediated by religious groups in the coming days. Gift Friday for VOA News, Juba.
Hundreds of government employees in WAO have received their pay after the national government increased the salaries of lower-paid civil servants by 300% following the devaluation of South Sudan's pound by 84%. Some of the civil servants say still there are even with the new increases, they still are unable to feed their families. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Wau.
The civil servants whose salaries were increased by 300% are from grade 10 up to grade 17. They work in the Information Ministry, the Urban Water Corporation, and at Wau Teaching Hospital. Some employees have been paid less than 500 South Sudanese pounds per month, which the government has increased to more than 1,000 South Sudanese pounds. Speaking in Arabic, Christina Santino says with her higher salary, she can now buy some basic necessities for her family.
It has solved some of my problems. Before, I could not meet most of my demands with the 500 SSP. Today, I went to the market and spent half of my salary and come back home with something remaining, not like before.
But Santino says so long as prices in the market continue to rise, the pay increase will have little impact on civil servants.
Every day you go to the market, you find prices increase. A kilogram of sugar is now at 35 SSP. We have even avoided maize flour because it has become so expensive. A kilogram sell at 45 SSP. It cannot do anything.
Many civil servants here agree, saying their recent pay rises will not make much of a difference if the South Sudanese pound continues to lose value against the U.S. dollar. Achai Kwol Rob, who works as a cleaner at the Information Ministry, says her salary was increased from 400 to 900 South Sudanese pounds. Speaking in Arabic, she says with the money she was paid can buy a bag of maize flour and okra, which she says will last less than a month.
This 900 SSP finished the same day in the market. I got a 25 kilogram of ungali at 500 SSP. I also bought okra at 70 and onion, which has also become expensive.
Peter Mayen is a grade 15 scale employee at the Urban Water Corporation. He says with his new salary, he was able to pay for food and school fees for his children.
Thank God we have received the new salary and it has solved some of our problems. But the market price is what makes our life difficult.
Agustino Manut, an accountant with the Urban Water Corporation, says the government needs to raise civil servants' allowances such as housing and medical care. Manut says even though he received more money this month, he is still unable to meet his family's needs due to the skyrocketing prices.
What I've seen in our institution, grade 10 between the business group, 2,950. This is grade 10. Then come to Darwin, the lower grade is 1,250. The 10 was receiving 1,500 because we have what we call danger alarms. If you get the one of the state, you can get the difference between the salary of the state and then the our salary.
Manut says the government must address the failing value of the South Sudanese currency. Unlike civil servants who fall under the national government, those employed by the Wau state government have not been paid for nearly 2 months. Wau state government employees are expecting similar adjustment in their salaries soon. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
And now for some news just in. At least 130 additional members of the first vice president designate team arrived in Juba today. United Nations Mission in South Sudan spokesperson Ariane Quinta says UNMISS will continue to transport members of the SPLA in opposition.
It is not the first group of people, of soldiers coming back. We started the whole process, the international community started on Thursday 24, and it will be ongoing every day at least until the end of the week. And then, according to the JMAC and what is left to do, we will be at the disposal of the JMAC and JMAC requests to continue supporting the process.
Other 90 soldiers were transported by the help of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body responsible for monitoring the South Sudan peace agreement.
They have the place already, so they are going to site one.
More SPLM-IO troops are expected to arrive later this week and next week. People living with disabilities in Awil State accuse local leaders of treating them unfairly. They say they are discriminated against when applying for jobs. Disabled people, many of whom were wounded during decades of conflict between the then Southern Sudan and the leadership in Khartoum, say their families could starve if they do not have any sources of income to support their families. Abraham Agot files this report for VOA from Awil.
In a petition addressed to the state government and humanitarian group, members of Awil Disabled Union allege they are denied jobs due to their physical impairments. They also complain about a lack of access to basic services, including clean water, education, and health care. Moses Kiryum, chairperson of the Awil Disabled Union, says South Sudan's economic crisis makes life much more difficult for disabled persons.
Because I'm even jobless, I don't have anything to register my children. They are staying as it is. And for the anger that we're facing now in this area, they are now just stay like that. They have no something to eat.
Peter Majok, Secretary General of the Awil Disabled Union, accuses the government of ignoring disabled people's needs.
We don't see the transparency that which could involve us into this situation of our country. That is why now we are still crying out. We are looking for our rights because we are not even job opportunities. We are not able. There are some people who need now to continue for education and they discontinue because of concentrations. These are people that were not considered as people. When they are walking in the street, see them like wild animals.
Majok wants state government and humanitarian officials operating in the area to come to their rescue. Union spokesman Santino Dudenkir says the main problem is that they can't cross into the neighboring Sudan to find other ways of survival. He says the government has done a poor job of managing the social affairs of the disabled.
Our population is being affected by deteriorating situation case due to hunger. The increase of prices in the market suffered our children while we are jobless. Thousands of people are fleeing crossing the border to neighboring Sudan seeking the feeding for themselves. But disabilities is our challenge. We are not able crossing the border by a wheelchair to Sudan.
Awil government spokesperson James Wiamayual says the state is aware of the concerns of people living with disabilities.
We need to support them, to bring them up and participate in the worldwide. Our government is not discriminating any. We are trying to support all our citizens, irrespective of their conditions, if they have disabled or not disabled. We are trying our best to consider their needs and put a priority.
He says officials in the newly created Awil State are still working to establish government structures and will employ any disabled people who are qualified.
We'll assume that some of them will be working in different ministries. People with disability are people that need to be treated equally. They need to be given the right.
Disabled people in Awil say unless state officials respond to their demands, they will stage a protest. The Awil Disabled Union was established in 2008 with only 20 members. It now has 300 members. For VOA News, I am Abraham Agot reporting in Awil.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the South African Constitutional Court and President Zuma. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
How do you access a computer and the internet?
Only in office or if I go to a friend at public offices. But I don't go to cyber because it's expensive, and slow.
For the meantime, I'm using my computer, but getting internet is difficult now unless you go to internet cafe and then other public places anyway. But it's hard sometimes for other people. But for me, sometimes I use my modem or I go and use internet cafe.
In my area, I access computer or internet while I'm working in my office. And at home, sometimes through Zen Connect, but not easy.
What Do You Think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Africa's Constitutional Court has ordered President Jacob Zuma to repay some of the 16 million in public funds used for upgrades at his private home. The ruling comes as authorities investigate Zuma for another more recent scandal, alleged undue influence given to the wealthy Gupta family. Thuso Khumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Handing down the Constitutional Court judgment on Thursday, Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng said President Zuma violated the Constitution when he ignored the public protector's order to pay back some of the money used to build non-security features at his private home.
The failure by the President to comply with the remedial action taken against him by the public protector in her report of 19 March 2014 is inconsistent with Section 83B of the Constitution and is invalid.
The court gave the National Treasury 60 days to determine how much Zuma should pay. Mokgweng said once the court receives the Treasury's report, Zuma must pay.
The President must personally pay the amount determined by the National Treasury within 45 days of this court's signification of its approval of the report.
The court also had harsh words for the National Assembly, where the ruling African National Congress allegedly shielded Zuma from paying back the money.
The resolution passed by the National Assembly, absolving the President from compliance with the remedial action taken by the public protector, is invalid and is set aside.
The Democratic Alliance Party and the Economic Freedom Fighters Party have pledged to impeach Zuma and remove him from office for violating the Constitution. Both the ANC and President Zuma have issued statements welcoming the judgment, saying they respect it. Political analyst Levindo says Zuma's fate is in the hands of the majority ANC party in parliament.
If they come out clearly and say the state president has breached his oath of office, that would provide sufficient reasons for parliament to move for a motion of no confidence on the state president.
The judgment has created more problems for the already embattled president. The country's elite police unit is also investigating Zuma's son for allegedly helping the wealthy Gupta family influence the appointment of ministers. The probe follows claims by government officials that people involved with the Gupta family's extensive business holdings offered them ministerial posts. The ruling ANC is also investigating, which analysts say could further hurt President Zuma's standing. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This Saturday, Kenya will mark a one-year anniversary of the terror attack on Garissa University. Al-Shabaab militants killed 148 people there, most of them students. In past year, Kenya says it has heightened its response capabilities, but the region and the continent remain on high alert for further attacks. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
On April 2, 2015, four gunmen from the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab stormed Garissa University in northeastern Kenya. 22-year-old Steve Mwangi was there. He hid in a cupboard with three others.
We headed from around 7 in the morning to 6:30 in the afternoon when the Rex squad came dancing to the hotel. I didn't even think I would get out of that house because when I realized they are seriously killing people and they killed two of my roommates, I was like, next, they'll come confirm inside the hotel. But fortunately, they did.
Mwangi moved off campus and now he commutes. He says he won't sleep in the dorm in case of another attack. Al-Shabaab militants said they attacked the university as payback for Kenyan military operations in Somalia. The siege at Garissa went on for at least 12 hours. Militants killed 148 people and wounded dozens others. Kenyan security forces were severely criticized for their slow response. According to local media, it took them at least 7 hours to reach the university. Interior Ministry spokesman Mwenda Njoka told VOA those deficiencies have been addressed.
With the refurbishment of helicopters and the additional that are also being bought, it means our paramilitary are able to move within the fastest time. Like, for instance, the reaction time for Garissa University, everybody admits that we didn't move as fast as we should have. But if we had the kind of equipment we have now, we'd have been able to get troops there within an hour or less.
And security analysts say the risk of similar attacks remain high. Homeland Security expert Richard Tuta points out that the attack on Garissa, like the most recent spate of Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, AQIM, attacks on hotels in West Africa, required just a handful of fighters.
The return will be very high in terms of the number of casualties, and the cost of attacking those targets is very minimum, because they don't require a lot of preparation. They don't require a lot of expertise in order to penetrate some of these soft targets.
A single attack like Garissa or the deadly three-day siege of Westgate Mall in Nairobi in 2013, while propaganda boons for Al-Shabaab. When Garissa happened in 2015, it had seemed Al-Shabaab was on the defensive amid continued pressure from African Union troops in Somalia. But shortly after, in mid-2015, the balance began to shift. Militants have raided military bases in Somalia, walking away with gear and killing dozens of regional troops in at least two attacks. Al-Shabaab has also increased bomb attacks in Somalia. Some experts believe the Al-Qaeda affiliate is in a fierce battle for survival as Islamic State group lures away its fighters and draws new recruits in the region. Observers also note that African terror affiliates are jockeying for funding and influence. Nairobi-based security expert Andrew Franklin sees more local motivations.
We are also missing out on the big picture, which is that Al-Shabaab's objective, its focus, if you will, for 2016, is on derailing the election scheduled in Mogadishu in August of 2016. Its objective is to demonstrate that the federal government of Somalia is unable to hold elections.
Since Garissa, Kenya has not seen a major terror attack, but the threat remains, and security experts say African security agencies must work together to stop militant groups and combat the spread of extremist ideology that is radicalizing young people. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Accessing education can often be a challenge for many refugees. One South Sudanese teenager living as an unaccompanied refugee in Uganda is not letting his dreams die. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
Before the conflict broke out in South Sudan in 2013, life was fairly good for 17-year-old Bol Deng. He was studying in Juba and would travel back to Juba each holiday to be with his family. But when the conflict erupted in Juba in late 2013, Deng says his family fled to Nimle and eventually ended up in Kiriandongo refugee settlement camp. Shortly thereafter, his parents, who are traders, returned to South Sudan, taking with them his two sisters. Bol and his three brothers stayed at the refugee camp. He says he was left with the responsibility of taking care of his brothers, and the only job he could find was washing motorbikes. At the Rift Valley swamp in Kiriandongo district of Uganda, Deng sets out each evening after school to go to work.
Each motorcycle you wash, you get 2,000 Ugandan shillings. That is how the work runs. You find in a day you get something of 8,000. That 8,000, others you can use it for your supper, lunch.
8,000 shillings is about 60 South Sudanese pounds. Deng says he uses the money to buy clothes and to buy more food beyond what he and his brothers are given by the aid agencies for refugees. His elder brother prefers to stay in a camp playing cards with his peers. His younger sibling is also in school. Kiriandongo refugee camp, located in central Uganda, shelters thousands of Kenyan and South Sudanese refugees. According to UNHCR, this settlement hosts more than 50,000 South Sudanese refugees. 90% of them arrived after the conflict broke out in December 2013. The UN Children's Agency UNICEF says the conflict has affected at least 7 million people, half of them children. Charles Yaxley is the UNHCR spokesperson in Uganda. He says UNHCR has not received any funding for South Sudanese refugees since the start of the year. Yaxley says this means that young refugees like Deng are not always getting all the humanitarian aid they are supposed to be receiving.
That's leaving real gaps, especially in areas of education. You know, these kids, many of whom have now been there for more than 2 years, they don't have enough schools. The schools that do exist, they don't have enough teachers, they don't have enough desks, they don't have the educational materials they need in order to provide them with the future that they deserve.
UNICEF estimates some 400,000 children have been forced out of school since the conflict began, bringing the total to 1.4 million South Sudanese children that are not in school. Ball says he wants to be a civil engineer and help rebuild his country. At Panyadole Senior Secondary School, Ball is in Form 5. He is doing physics, economics and mathematics and hopes he will one day make his dream a reality.
If I go there, actually I'll be able to do something little for my country and for my family. You know, there are some few, there are actually few engineers in South Sudan there. So I can do something better for them.
Each day, he makes sure he does his work at school before rushing to the washing bay, about a kilometer away from the camp.
Here, sometimes even, there are few customers who come and bring their motorcycle to be washed. So you find yourself in a day, sometimes you get 2,000, yet you hope to get something of 10. That 2,000 can't help you in doing anything.
Today, 22-year-old Boda Boda driver Stephen Opio has brought his motorbike in for washing. He says a simple act like paying Deng can help him achieve his dreams.
If I give him a job, it means I have a part of help. Because we are one, like, next time also we may go to the country there also. Shall we have the same heart?
The Office for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in Uganda says nearly 3,000 South Sudanese villagers have fled to Uganda in the last 2 weeks alone to escape continuing violence and a scarcity of food. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Mungume Davis Rakaring prepared this report in Juba. And with that, we have come to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Survival by Bob Marley. We have been listening to Bob Marley with that song, Black Survivors. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Like Shedrock, Meshach, and Abednego, born in the
fire, but you never get it.